Why don't we go ahead and start? I know people are joining, but we can go ahead and start. We said 5 o'clock and it is time. So thank you everyone for joining Town Hall today, June 17th, 2026. We have, as usual, a presentation and a slide deck for you to walk through the presentation. Mike, you're handling the slides? Or is Chrissy? Okay, next. So today's participants, we have, as you can see on the next page, a number of participants as usual, but this time we wanted to give you a slide deck with their names. We have Matthew Ward on behalf of the liquidation trustee as the representative, and this is on the liquidation trust side of things. We have Rick Budd as wind down CEO. We have Tommy Fierro as chief financial officer. And of course, we have Ice Miller, who is myself, Louis DeLucia, Allison Fiedler, and Michael Ott as counsel to the liquidation trust. Alvarez Marcel is also on, Andrea Gonzalez, Bill Waldy as financial advisors, investigators, et cetera, as well as Rick Barry, who is investigator for the trust. On behalf of the advisory board, we have Caroline Spiteri, who is the chair of the advisory board. We have Helen Green and Chris Divino. And of course, their counsel, Oaken Hollander, Margareta Margolis. And I believe Paul may or may not be on, but Margareta as well. So that's who is here. Going back to the agenda for a moment, the agenda is the real estate presentation, which will be a fairly large component of the presentation, a brief moment to address the tax issues, which have been raised periodically, and Tommy Fierro will do that. We'll provide a litigation update, which is fairly streamlined. I hope you'll get what you need from that. Some questions and answers from those posted in the portal, and then a closing statement by the trustee. So let's go ahead and start with the real estate update. Rick, it's all yours.
Okay, thanks. Can you hear me all right? Good. Okay. Thanks. Thanks everybody for joining. We have a little bit of ground to cover, so I'll try to be as efficient as possible. This is the index broken down, but if we go to the next page, it's easier. Thank you. So we have properties that we have under contract for sale. Then we have recently completed sites, which is really the grand, and we have active construction assets, and then we have our pre-development assets. So we'll be going into more detail on each of these as we proceed. So the next slide. So this slide is recent updates from the last town hall. We have three sites that have or are under contract or have sold. 1070 Del Harbor was the last single family home that we had in Delray, which we had always knew would be the last to close, closest to the road, smaller unit, et cetera. But pleased that that was under contract and that closed last month at $3.675 million. Guttenberg Green, we had two sites in Guttenberg. One we had sold earlier. This one was more problematic. We've had it listed for a while with CBRE. We looked ourselves to see if it made sense for us to build. It's a smaller 60, it's approved for 63 units. It didn't, from our standpoint, it did not make sense. We could not make the numbers work profitably enough. That coincided with a recent buyer coming in, and we're now under contract to sell that for $2.75 million, and we anticipate that to close in September. The largest asset is the station. We had told you last time that we were in a sale process with CBRE. It's now under contract for $45.6 million. We estimated the close to be September of 26. It's possible it could be earlier, but to be conservative, we're estimating right now that would be September. The next slide, please. Thank you. So this is the station update. Just to remind you, it's 97 units with a retail tenant at 95% occupied. We started leasing in 24. We switched over property managers to Graystar. We have a $30 million loan with Ease Capital, also funded by Taconic Capital. So that loan is there. As I said, we're under contract at $45.6 million. But we're still waiting for our grocer to open. We're still waiting for their final inspection to get their certificate of occupancy. As we've said before, they've been paying on their lease for the last almost 2 years. And then their construction got started late. They've passed all their inspections. So we anticipate them to open in the next, 30 days or so. But that's the good news on the station. The next slide. So the Grand, which is just two blocks away, where the leasing is going very well there, 91% here at the end of May. I would say by now it's probably 95% leased. We have our loan from MidCap, which we'll talk about a little bit later, as the $22 million loan that we have on this asset. But we are looking at getting through our renewals this summer. This will be listed for sale before the end of the year. And we would anticipate a sale of this asset probably in Q1 of 27. Next slide, please. So the Metro is it's the same building as the Grand, identical building next door, just separated by a parking lot. The parking lot that we built, and same 156 units. The good news is that the total construction budget came in $600,000 less than the Grand. So we're about 38% occupied. We expect now to have this building in a certificate of occupancy standpoint in October of 27, which is about 60 days earlier than initially had been anticipated. So that's really good news. We have our lender from MidCap, which we'll talk about the mortgage there, the $43 million mortgage. We were successful in having the first draw under that mortgage this month. So you'll see later that there is nothing outstanding as of the end of May. Our equity commitment is completed now. So the balance of the construction now will be funded by MidCap. Next slide, please. So this is the probably more detail than you want, but we provided it for you anyway, so you could see the various hurdles that we have to get through and accomplish to get to the final CO, as you can see, back in October of 27. But the SoCo Construction Group is doing great. Tony Ulisi is whipping them every other day. So it's going really well. Next slide, please. So the Water Club in Philadelphia, we had talked about this as a multifamily project. We have pivoted here to a townhouse project. What we found was that the townhouse required much less capital from our standpoint. We can arrange non-recourse financing. We found an excellent partner in the Concordia Group. They're a regional developer. They've done over 40 townhouse communities, many of them in the Philadelphia area. So the townhouses, the original concept for this site back in the day was townhouses. And what we found with the multifamily is that we, at the end of the day, we thought there was going to be too much execution risk and too much financing risk. And so we think this is a much more efficient, faster, almost as profitable venture. So we've executed the term sheet with the Concordia Group, and we will proceed forward. We'll have better updates for you next quarter. Next slide. This is just to, we've seen this slide before, the location, which is a terrific location in South Philadelphia, terrific residential location between retail, access to the bridges, access to the sports complex and the building that's going on there, access to the highway to go west in the city. So it's an excellent location. Concordia had a similar site in North Philadelphia, which was very successful, building out over 400 townhouses with no retail within walking distance. So it's between this, they are extremely optimistic about our sellout here, given the access that owners will have to walking retail. Next slide, please. So our marina is substantially complete. We've been waiting on Florida Power and Light to come in to do final connections, and they've arrived pretty much, although not every day, but at least they're in the neighborhood. So we anticipate having that completed, and hopefully we will be open by the end of July or August 1. But, you know, it's been on budget with Bellingham Construction. Our fuel tanks are now in. There were no fuel tanks in the past at the marina, but that's been, we believe, is going to be a significant addition and a significant profit center for the marina once we're open. So we're excited about this, hopefully by the next time we speak with you, it will be open and operating. Next slide. So our upland parcel, again, we have had several different discussions with parties that would like to look at doing a joint venture with us for apartments or condos, probably more apartments. But again, nothing, you know, that we're willing to step forward or recommend. We've been working with CBRE, has brought these parties to us, but it's also listed for sale, and it has been listed for sale. So, you know, any offers, which we haven't had any from a cash offer standpoint, we're ready to, you know, potentially entertain. In the meantime, our restaurant, which is up there, we are finalizing a lease with a new operator to come in. That lease should be in place, and the restaurant probably with the tenant improvements that they'll be doing, and we're not supplying any money for tenant improvements. The tenant is building this out with their own cash. So hopefully this could be open by the first of the year, which would be, you know, in the middle of the season down there. Next slide. So this is our Fort Lauderdale sites. Again, we've also had interested parties here looking at one or both for joint ventures, but nothing that we're willing to recommend or step forward. Again, just to emphasize, these have been listed since confirmation. It's a difficult market in this particular part of Fort Lauderdale. But, you know, we are, you know, continually looking at the opportunities. Next slide, please. So this is just a little macro look at part of some of the challenges with some of the larger sites. So the 10-year Treasury bill, you know, went down below 4%. Right about the time of our last meeting, end of February, early March, and it's been pretty well shot up before, up 70 basis points to 4.67, and, you know, now 4.55. So the only reason we put this in there is that this is a real, you know, headwind for us. I mean, the higher interest rates, you know, are an impediment to value in commercial real estate. It creates higher borrowing costs, and creates, you know, a real negative impact with cap rates. So there's nothing any of us can do about it, but just to keep you informed as to what we're looking at and what we see, and hopefully, you know, things will become a little more stabilized, although nobody's anticipating, you know, rate cuts. There weren't any today. Nobody's anticipating any before the end of the year. But that's just a macro look at part of the headwind we have sometimes. Next slide, please. So this is a summary of the mortgages that we have in the portfolio. The station, as we said before, has a $30 million mortgage with Ease Capital with an 8.65% interest rate. That matures at the end of September. The Grand, right, we completed that financing with MidCap back in February, I believe. So we have $22 million outstanding on that loan, but it's a $54 million loan. So we have $31.5 million available. That was the structure of the loan to basically create a line of credit, for lack of a better term, that can be used for anything. So we've not drawn down on that. And then we have the Metro, which is a $43 million construction loan, showing zero outstanding at 531. But as I mentioned earlier, we did our first draw on that, $2+ million, I believe. So the balance of the construction finance of the construction capital that's needed to complete the Metro will be coming from this $43 million loan. So that's good news. We don't have any more cash that, you know, we're going to be funding in any material way. We did look at the station, and if you see, there's an effective interest rate difference of over 100 basis points. It's 8.65 at the station and 7.48 at the Grand. So what we recommended to do was, let's use that $30 million of that availability and pay off the station loan while we're waiting to sell. It saves us about $1,000 a day in interest. And if things get delayed for one reason or another, we don't have to worry about that September maturity date, right? Because this is already in place. And I should mention that using that $30 million from the Grand facility requires no fees, no legal fees. It's basically cash available to us. We made that recommendation back at the beginning of May, requiring the advisory board's consent, but they've not agreed to do this. So that resulted in us filing a motion with the court to seek approval to do this refinancing. Last slide. So the last slide is just a summary of the portfolio dispositions. It starts in chronological order from back at confirmation in August of 23. As you can see, we've sold 16 properties. We have another two on contract, the station and Guttenberg. And then we have the balance of the portfolio yet. So we've sold $65 million. We have $48 million under contract. That would be $113 million. And obviously some of the larger assets are still to be sold. So we're optimistic. We think things are positioned very well for you all and for the portfolio. And you know, we are excited to keep going. I think that's it. Thanks.
Hi, everyone. So Tommy Fierro, this is just a repeat of the tax slide, no change from the last version. We always like to remind everyone that the liquidation trustee and the liquidation trust professionals are not providing and cannot provide individual tax advice. We're always going to urge you to consult with your individual tax advisors. Historically, there had been a lot of discussion about the 2021 and 2022 AARs. Those have been filed and mailed out. They're also available electronically. If anyone needs a copy, please email us at info@airnmanagement.com. These AARs do not trigger prior year amendments. They will get reported on your 2025 returns that are due in 2026. The 2025 grantor letters will also be available in September 2026. So we're working on those. Those will be done in the next couple months. any questions regarding the tax documents or requests for those tax documents, again, feel free to email us info@airnmanagement.com and we'll get you copies of your documents. That's all I have. Thanks, everyone.
All right. Next is the litigation update. This is an update, obviously, from the last town hall. I'll give the standard disclaimer. There is a lot behind what I say and what this report reflects, meaning that this is a summary overview of what's going on, not the detail or minutia, because there are litigation strategies, litigation communications that we can't necessarily produce here because this is public forum. It's available to our adversaries, and that frequently does happen. They do listen in, they pull down the transcripts and or the videos and use it in court. So this will be somewhat circumspect, but it'll be a summary to the best of our ability. But in terms of the litigation, as for those who don't know, Omni has a docket that is live and available to you. You can see any of the pleadings we refer to. When possible, we provide docket numbers, et cetera, or case numbers, so you can see those cases yourselves and the filings yourselves. That's at the Omni docket you see at the very top. So in addition to the adversary proceedings and litigations that we'll get into in a moment, we have filed at least three substantive, and I mean substantive in the forms of the relief requested motions. The first is the 10th omnibus objection to claims, referring specifically and more targetedly to the Levine Capital claim. What that's trying to do is essentially take the claims that were an investor's claims who were in Levine Capital and invested in NRA through Levine Capital, treat those as claimants within the NRA case themselves, and deal with the fact that Levine Capital is viewed by the liquidation trust as a, I'll use a quote, feeder fund that provided these investors access to NRA and obtained consideration for selling those securities or facilitating the sale of those securities. So that motion is pending. Again, it is contested, so we're not going to get heavy into it, but the end result will be hopefully addressing the legitimate investors who invested through Levine Capital into the trust while preserving rights and exercising rights against Levine Capital. So that's really the bulk of the 10th omnibus claims objection. The next motion is the motion that Rick referred to earlier regarding the Grand and the Station. And as he mentioned, it's a motion to authorize the wind down entities, which Rick manages with Tommy and under the trust, the liquidation trustee, to draw on the delayed draw funding holdback, which is approximately $30 million under the Grand credit facility, and use those proceeds to refinance and pay off the existing Ease Capital loan secured by the Station property. It's an exercise of the liquidation trustees and really the AIRN's efforts to maximize the return to the beneficiaries. Rick described the benefits, which included an interest savings that would hopefully benefit you at the end of the day without incremental fees or costs. That is pending and will be heard by the court, I think, July 7th. So that is what is on for that motion. It also removes the risk, as Rick mentioned, of a risk associated with the loan to be paid off. Next is the motion to extend time to commence actions that was just filed. Nothing new there. For those who don't understand the process, this is not an effort to delay the resolution or dissolution or settlement of the trust and the payment to investors. This is an effort to preserve, should we find later through continued litigation, a claim that should be pursued, to preserve the rights to continue and litigate against parties that are not being sued right now, just to preserve those claims and to make sure that the trust has the right and any statute of limitations does not expire before those claims are brought. It's just a preservation of rights motion. It is on for June 23rd, and the order was entered actually just today, setting that as June 23rd with opposition due June 22nd at 4 p.m., if any. Hopefully none, because that is beneficial, we believe, to the trust. Next, let's talk about the adversary proceedings. Since we last spoke, we've commenced three new relatively substantive, one at least that is very substantive, complaints. One is against Bloomberg. Some questions came in through the portal before this call regarding Bloomberg, and you can take a look at that litigation. It's on the Omni docket. It's under dockets. You'll see the adversary proceeding 26-01163. It is a substantive complaint. I'll get into it in a moment through the chart. That's next. Seeking the same as other complaints, essentially aiding and abetting the fraud. And taking other acts that would put them in the scope of liability, meaning Bloomberg in the scope of liability for facilitating and promoting the sale of securities. Carney Stanton, similar claims, except Carney Stanton and Crystal Title were professionals and a title company that transacted business with NRA and others, including an individual known as McPhillan. And the allegations in that complaint are that those folks who were down in Florida facilitated the fraud by transacting business and benefiting McPhillan and others, as opposed to U.S. investors, by allowing transactions to be consummated in furtherance of the fraud. So that claim has been brought against them and is pending. We'll get into that in a moment, too, a little bit more. The third of the new, more substantive causes of action is the what we're calling the subsequent transferee case. It comes out of the Deepit Anon litigation, which has been pending for a little bit. Deepit Anon had brought a motion to dismiss, but we succeeded in keeping the bulk, if not all, most of that complaint alive. The judge grant essentially allowed us to continue that litigation against Deepit Anon. And in discovery there, we found that certain individuals and investors obtained through investments through Sapphire certain net returns that were in excess of the investments. In other words, they were net winners. And because they received distributions through Deepit, the allegations are that they should not benefit while you do not benefit. And so we're seeking to claw back the net profits they received. That litigation is pending, just commenced, as you see, May 22nd. And some investors have reached out to us to ask about the nature of these claims and whether or not they really were net winners. We will communicate and work with them to determine whether or not they are net winners. But that includes well over 100 defendants in that case, and seeks to recover well over $4 million there as well. So Grabato, an update on Grabato. That is also a question that came through the portal, but I'll give you that update. As you may know or recall, the liquidation trustee obtained millions in default judgments against Grabato, but he's been hard to find. But the trustee has had discussions with counsel and is in the process of engaging counsel in Manila and plans to enforce existing judgments against Grabato. We've engaged A&M, who has been very helpful in performing an asset search. Their report details a lot of business and properties under the control of Grabato's family. A lot of the what we're identifying and seeing here is that the bulk of the assets are in Grabato's family and affiliates. He does not, per se, individually, on the public available record, demonstrate holding a lot of assets. His condition, medical condition, is that he has suffered a stroke apparently in January of 2026 and is currently undergoing rehabilitation, requiring wheelchair assistance for mobility, but can stand apparently with assistance. There's no real property identified in his name. There are some sole proprietorships that are possibly in his or family member names. He could be a silent partner in certain businesses, but this investigation is going on. We are digging, as you can tell, deep into his assets and family relationships. We'll be working with Manila counsel to chase down what we can. Assets in his family name may have passed through him to them. We're not disregarding that possibility. And so we'll be digging heavily into that. So that is the Grabato update. There is movement there for those who are concerned about that. Next slide. All right, so this chart and the following pages just gives a quick overview. Again, this chart is available, as I understand, on Omni. Once we're done, it'll be posted, as I understand, for investors to see. But another major litigation, we have 13 pending actions here. Bank of America is a very substantial litigation. There is extensive discovery ongoing there. 400,000 documents, not pages, but documents. So you imagine it's well over a million pages and of information is being culled through for discovery. We are in negotiations with them about certain disputed discovery. And that's all we're at liberty to say, except that litigation is proceeding. And of course, hundreds of millions of dollars are sought for your benefit. Valley National Bank, similar situation. You may recall, by the way, as to both of those cases, the liquidation trust was successful in preserving the bulk of its claims against both of those, meaning Bank of America and Valley, in response to their motions to dismiss, which we succeeded in largely defeating, with the exception of a count or two. So those claims are proceeding against Valley Bank, again, in discovery, substantial claims sought against the bank for aiding and abetting the fraud, same with Bank of America. It will be a while before you get any significant changes in these litigations because discovery takes a while. And the discovery deadlines, as you can see, are well into the future. So there will be depositions, there'll be documents, there'll be third-party discovery, meaning discovery of other people separate from the bank to see what happened. And that will be ongoing over the next coming months. With Deepit Anand, the same similar situation, except that defendant's counsel, meaning his counsel, withdrew with the permission of the court. We don't know precisely why, putatively because of non-payment, but that is proceeding and in discovery. That led to the filing, as I mentioned, of the subsequent transferee complaint, which is proceeding as I discussed. Samuel, which you may recall is a ex-spouse of Nick Salzano, that discovery is ongoing. We are not anticipating a protracted case here. We are seeking summary judgment against her and seeking judgment enforcement because we already have judgments against Budinska and others, who is another ex-spouse of Nick Salzano, for transfers to them. And we'll be proceeding to collect on those recoveries. Next slide. Whipfley, that is also a litigation against a national accounting firm. We've had calls on this as recently as today, and we are actively engaged in pursuing those claims. There is a discovery date that is likely to be extended, but this is the current date, but it may be extended, largely because of availability of witnesses and otherwise, but depositions are ongoing. Paper discovery, meaning exchanging of information, is ongoing. We hope to see where it goes. But again, there too, we defeated largely their motion to dismiss. DMR, you can see here, there are several aspects of it against DMR. These are construction related. And they have been fairly successful to some degree. We have arbitrations going on the Gulf Streams property. Manhattan Avenue arbitration is ongoing. These are affirmative claims by the trust and ARN against others in connection with the construction and development of those properties. We did settle the Bergen Line dispute with DMR successfully. We have had substantial recoveries from insurers in connection with these properties as well that have benefited all of you by millions. So, but these are continuing, and this litigation will continue on the construction-related litigation. Insider promoters, these are people that you probably dealt with extensively, people like Harrington, Fallis, and others. These individuals all actively solicited investors, spoke to investors. The complaints have been pending for a while. There have been some settlements, not large, but there have been some settlements with Hapshi, which may or may not go forward. There's some back and forth going on with that individual. Gaglani is largely settled, just dotting I's, crossing T's, and that will be a decent recovery for you. Luca defendants also, small recovery. Rosenberg defendants settled. But Fallis and Harrington have been unwilling to settle. Mediations were not successful, but we believe they have substantial liability. They have assets from which we can recover should we succeed in that litigation. And we are proceeding with that litigation now through discovery, et cetera. Two defendants actually. So it's a group of defendants that are these insider promoters. Two defendants are very ill. we will be putting those litigations on hold because we simply can't depose people in the hospital. So those people are ill, and that's how those will be stayed. McFillin. McFillin is an individual you heard me mention earlier in connection with another litigation, meaning the Kearney-Stanton litigation. He is also identified in the U.S. construction litigation, which you may recall settled. That McFillin is in active discovery. We attempted to mediate with him as well. Unsuccessful. He refused to settle. An individual we believe has assets to compensate this trust for aiding and abetting the securities fraud and the recovery of assets. That litigation is in discovery. We've taken his deposition. We're in the process of taking other depositions in the near future, and we hope to have a positive recovery there for you. Next. Bloomberg, I already described for you. That is an active litigation. Again, aiding and abetting. Many of you have dealt with and saw their advertisements. Many of you may have been attracted to this investment because of the advertisements they heard. Those claims are proceeding against them apace. They have filed a motion to dismiss, and we are briefing our response to that motion to dismiss. And that will be heard in August, and we will see how the judge rules. It'll be a difficult case, but we'll see how it goes. Kearney-Stanton, same here. We have the complaint against not only the law firm Kearney-Stanton, but also Crystal Title. One of the attorneys at Kearney-Stanton is also a principal of Crystal Title. And Crystal Title and that attorney filed a motion to dismiss the case, but Kearney-Stanton itself did not. We are briefing our response to that motion to dismiss now, and we should be arguing it in the near future, and we'll see how the court decides that motion to dismiss. Our appeal of the media effective case, which you recall we got the $5 million recovery on, but we believe the judge made a mistake on his interpretation of the New Jersey securities law governing aiding and abetting securities under New Jersey securities law. The Bureau of Securities, New Jersey Bureau of Securities, wrote a brief, what's called an amicus brief, supporting us in that litigation, and wrote it in that, it wrote a brief in the district court supporting our position. But the court has taken everything under advisement, and we're waiting to see how the court rules on our motion to have the judge, bankruptcy judge's ruling reversed, and the defendant's motion to dismiss the appeal. I'm pleased to report that just yesterday, in response to our motion for summary judgment in the affirmative claim by the Gutenberg defendants, plaintiffs against us for allegations that were baseless regarding environmental cleanup on their property, we won on summary judgment and the case is dismissed as to us. So that will stop all litigation burn on that litigation, which was unnecessary. And we're exploring avenues to recover costs. Next. Investor questions. Mike, you want to start rolling with that one?
Sure. So we'll start with the questions we received in connection with the in connection with registrations. And once again, just take this moment to apologize for the issues with the town hall last week, the technical issues we had. I think hopefully we've gotten them resolved. We're still trying to figure out some of the kinks here with this new platform. So please bear with us. We received a number of questions about when the next distribution will be made. And Matthew, I'm going to throw this one to you in terms of responding to that.
Yeah, thank you, Michael. Things are still, as we announced at the last town hall, it likely will be early in 2027. Yes, we do have a couple sales coming up, as noted, including the Bergen Line sale, but we still have cash needs of the trust on an ongoing basis. And so under cash projections, the low point is shortly after early 2027. And so the hope is as the grand comes in with a sale in that first quarter, you know, that will replenish the cash and make the way for a material distribution.
Thank you.
And of course, if we hit on a litigation or something in the intervening period, you know, we could potentially make a distribution. Understand that if there's only small amounts available free and clear for distribution, there are costs associated with making a distribution. So we don't want to have distributions diluted by the cost of actually making them. And so, you know, we think it would make sense to have the sizable distribution be in early 2027.
Thank you, Matthew. Just another question with respect to distributions. Can we expect a full recovery in years to come? I think that's still unlikely, but Matthew, if you want to speak to that.
Yeah, I mean, there's no way to predict these things with certainty. I agree, a full recovery is unlikely. You know, under the plan we projected, I think it was a 25 to 35% recovery from real estate. And I still think that we will meet that and likely exceed it. We have kicked out about 22% to date from litigation, largely from litigation. And so, you know, when you couple those two percentages together, you know, I think it's, I feel comfortable saying that it should be at least a 50% distribution. Hopefully it's higher. But again, it's just, there's so many variables moving with interest rates and litigation recoveries, bringing real estate to market. You just can't be certain on predictions, but that's how I would answer that question.
That makes sense. All right. A lot of variations on the theme, but we'll move on to tax documents and K-1s. This first question is channeling a little bit of frustration. We do not want to have to hold our taxes until September every freaking year for the next 10 years. How do you plan to address this? Tommy, do you want to jump in and explain the issue with why it takes so long to prepare the tax documents?
Yeah, so I think, I mean, generally, our corporate structure being a trust, our deadline to file our return, the ARN liquidation trust return, is actually September 30th. Right, returns of this size are very complex and voluminous, and we try to get them done as soon as we can. But obviously, we have a limited staff, and we still have to handle all the real estate operations. So, you know, we do our best to get everything done, and everything is always filed timely. But, you know, we're hitting our deadlines, and that's really all that we can, you know, guarantee.
Yeah, I mean, if I could just supplement that real quick, Tommy, you know, so Tommy isn't going to toot his own horn. But I mean, I remember last year when we did this, you know, when Tommy says that the tax return is complex, you know, that doesn't mean 60 pages as opposed to a 1040 EZ, you know, that's 3 or 4 pages. I mean, the tax return is hundreds. I think it's actually thousands of pages, as I recall. I want to say it was a couple thousand pages last year, if I'm not mistaken. But it is a massive undertaking involving a number of professionals. So I, you know, I just throw that out there that it's, you know, it's a Herculean effort to get that done.
Thank you, Matthew. Yeah, it's definitely in the thousands, pushing, you know, sometimes up to 10,000 pages per year. So there's a lot to review and a lot to iron out before we can finalize these and get them out in the mail.
There are a couple of questions about when they will receive the K-1 for 2025. Just a reminder that it's a grantor letter now, not a K-1, but that will come out towards the end of September, early October, as mentioned earlier. When can I take a write-off on my tax account for losses of investment in NRIA? So as Tommy mentioned during his presentation, we cannot give out individual tax advice. We are not your tax accountant. We are not your tax attorneys. You have to discuss that with your own accountant or attorney in order to determine what is appropriate for your tax filings. Tommy, unless you have anything more to add to that, I think
you handled
that's unfortunately the answer that we have to give you. I wish we could give you more, but we can't.
Yep. Thank you, Mike. That's it to a T.
Yeah, I mean, the problem is it depends so much on your own individual circumstances. So we're not going to just venture to guess. The next question, somewhat related to distributions, please provide an updated view on target recovery rates. I believe in the March town hall, we were still just saying better than 25 to 35%. That was 2.5 years ago, given the huge litigation recoveries already completed and the significant real estate assets whose value we obviously have an opinion on. It would be helpful to get a properly updated target. Now, I think Matthew answered that question when he was speaking, that it's going to be materially greater, hopefully over 50%, but it really depends on circumstances that are beyond our control and then also timing, which is also difficult to assess. Matthew, is there anything more you want to add to that?
No, I agree with that. And I mean, I understand that the plan was overwhelmingly approved at that 25 to 35%, recognizing that that didn't include litigation recoveries, that was real estate recoveries, but we're on track to meet or exceed that.
Let's see, litigation update. What is the status of lawsuit against Bloomberg? I think Lewis went through that. Can we recover all our money from them because they allowed fake advertising for years? I watched NRIA ads for about 2 years and really started believing because of this reputed network. So they should pay for all those damages and they can afford it easily. When do we get our next payment and around how much? So as Lewis mentioned, we are pursuing litigation against Bloomberg as vigorously as we can. We'd be happy to talk to you about your experience with Bloomberg in the event that it might provide facts that will help us. But I think that's...
Yeah, Mike, let me just supplement that. I think more than happy to. We'd like to speak to you, please. So if that investor could reach out to us independently, please do so. And we will also put you in touch with our investigators. We have spoken to other investors. You're not alone, of course, as you mentioned. But please reach out to us affirmatively because we have to convince the court what we already believe, which is investors relied on the representations made by Bloomberg. And your help will help us and help all investors. So please do so. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, just real quick, Lewis, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think Bloomberg is the one, and I know we're not going to comment on likely recoveries of specific litigations, but just so investors have this, like with Bloomberg, I think that was the mediation that I showed up at. It was there for like 5 minutes, and they made quite clear they didn't want to settle and basically wasted, you know, everybody's day. So look, they had their chance to settle it. They missed. And so we're gonna sue them. And if it takes suing them, and if we lose, we'll appeal. And we'll keep going after Bloomberg until we get a sizable recovery for investors. So I don't particularly like my time being wasted. And that's going to be taken into account as we chase them. So that's Bloomberg in a nutshell. And I'm not going to comment on any other of the individual litigation matters, but I just throw that out there for people to hear.
Thanks, Matthew. Go ahead, Mike.
All right. A couple of other oldies but goodies. One is the RICO charge coming. Again, we pursued RICO against U.S. Construction. We have settled with U.S. Construction. We are not pursuing any RICO counts with any other parties. RICO is valuable in that it provides expanded discovery and 3x damages, but if no one can pay the damages that they have going anyway, then they're not going to be able to pay 3x damages. RICO claims are also very expensive, so it often doesn't make sense to pursue them. The next question is, please provide an update on sales property and any lawsuits pending. When do you anticipate being paid out? I think we've already covered that question in both Rick's presentation and Matthew's answer to the distribution question. Real estate and property values. Is the property on the north wing of Manhattan Avenue in Union City a liquidation trust asset? Rick, I'm going to throw that to you.
The only asset we had on Manhattan Avenue was 1300 Manhattan, and that's been sold some time ago. I'd have to go back and look at the last page of the presentation, but we don't have any other assets on Manhattan Avenue.
Okay. And then a detailed calendar update and status on all the properties, included updated target completion dates. That's all that matters to 2,000 investors. That was in the presentation. This presentation, as was mentioned, will be loaded to the Omni site for everybody to review at their leisure later, and you'll be able to go through that real estate report with a fine-tooth comb. All right, last section of questions from the registrations, and then we'll move to the questions submitted during the town hall. Is my claim still pending? I will respond directly to the investor who asked that question separately. Then the question, may I cancel my Madison Trust account and still receive any distribution checks? Yes, you can cancel and take a distribution for your Madison Trust account. There are procedures and complexities involved in that. I would suggest talking to your accountant or your attorney. You can also reach out to Madison Trust. I know that they, in the past and present and probably future, have been not the easiest people to work with, but hopefully you will have better luck. That will likely involve having to reach out to us for some help on it. So once you reach out to Madison Trust to try and cancel your account and you get a response from them, feel free to email me and I will help you navigate their system with respect to canceling your account. So that is the questions that were submitted beforehand. Let's turn to the questions that have come in during the presentation. This is from one investor. Glad to hear that a couple of properties are expected to sell by September 2026, about $50 million sales price across the three properties. How much of that will be distributed to the investors? Rick, I'm going to throw that to you.
I think we already answered that. But
yeah, and just to clarify, the $50 million includes a mortgage, right? So there's a $30 million mortgage, the one that we're trying to refinance one way or the other, no matter who holds it. So the net proceeds back will be less than $20 million.
What is the expected project end date for the Philadelphia Water Club with Concordia Group? Rick?
Probably late 2029 or 2030 is what we're forecasting for the last townhouse to be sold. I think we're looking at 5 a month, roughly. So that's the time frame.
Yeah, if I could just comment on that. I mean, I like the idea about the townhouses because, you know, first of all, it reduces the need for large capital infusions into the project. And also, you know, perhaps equally as importantly, since it's not going to be a tower, we don't have to wait to completion in order to start monetizing our properties, right? As townhouses continue to get built throughout the development, we can bring them to market even as we're continuing to build other townhouses on the same site. So, you know, I think that's going to have a favorable outcome too from that particular project. So I'm excited about that one.
All right, the next question. Julia, Tommy Fierro, the 21-22 letters were mailed, but we've never received them. When was it mailed? Tommy, when was the AAR mailed?
Those went out at some point in, you know, October 2025. Just shoot us an email, info@airnmanagement.com, and we'll send over an electronic copy. It's always going to be fastest and easiest.
Another question. Why did the advisory council not approve the refi suggestion? I would like to hear their reasoning. Matthew, I'll go to you on that, perhaps.
Yeah, I mean, they're on
Hold
here.
Hold on. I think they're on here.
As participants. But I would also say, you know, reach out to them and hear from them. You know, they have their view and they can certainly speak for themselves.
Matt, I am on. This is Helen Green. And just, you know, as a quick clarification, and following up what Lewis was saying about the motion that was filed recently by the trust for that drawdown, I just like to say that there is going to be a response filed by our counsel making it clear that the advisory board did agree to the draw if it was done in a manner that protected the trust. So that is the issue. And I'm just making that clear, and any investor is welcome to reach out to the advisory board or our counsel for any further information.
Thank you for that, Helen.
You bet.
Question, are you using AI in the discovery process? Well, I can speak to that. We have from the very beginning been using a technology-assisted review in our discovery in order to speed up and facilitate the review of documents during the discovery process. I have spent a lot of time on AI products. I'm actually the chair of our firm's AR steering committee, and I can say that it's very important that even if you use AI, you get attorney eyes on the actual documents because they need to know what's in the file. So it does speed up the time it takes to review documents, and we are taking advantage of that, but it doesn't just minimize it or make it trivial. So just to keep that in mind, similar question, actually basically the same question. Let's see, another question. The McPhillan litigation shows expert discovery date of August 2027. Should that be August 2026? I believe that's probably that is almost certainly a typo.
Yeah, I thought I responded to that, but maybe not. Yes, it's correct. It should be 2026.
From an investor, who should we contact specifically regarding a statement on Bloomberg, also those billboards everywhere? Please feel free to email you know, those of us on this call at From Ice Miller. We will send the we'll coordinate on that, Lewis.
Yeah, I was gonna recommend I was gonna give Bill Waldy Bill's email address so that they can reach out to A&M directly because they're compiling the information. So in that box, in an answer to that investor, I will put in Bill Waldy's email address if that's okay.
Great. Question about the Philadelphia Water Club. How many townhouses will need to be sold at the Philadelphia Water Club to pay all encumbrances and costs? Rick?
I'd have to go back and look at our full underwriting. Our return is expected to be, you know, 35 to 40 million, something like that. So again, we'd have to back into it.
Okay. There's a question about taxes. Since I've invested through an LLC, the taxes for which are due on September 15th, is it possible to get the K-1s a week before that so I don't have to file an amendment every year? I unfortunately don't think that is possible. I don't think we can issue any K-1s before they're all done. But Tommy, if you want to give a more fulsome response.
Correct. I mean, generally what we have done for those investors, if you reach out looking for an estimate at that point, we may have something in shape that is close enough, but you'd always have to discuss that with your tax advisor, as you know, as far as whether you want to file an amend or wait, or however you handle that. That's going to be between you and your personal advisor. As we get closer to, you know, the month of September, you know, reach out, and whatever we have, we'll certainly share. And again, we'll try to get things done as quickly as possible, but not something that we can guarantee. And that email address is going to be the same address, right? info@airnmanagement.com. You know, I get those emails and I'll respond, you know, accordingly.
Thank you, Tommy. What is the status of the comp package as the judge took it under advisement? Has there been a conclusion? No, there has not. It is still under advisement. We are all patiently waiting for a conclusion from the judge. Another question, what about litigation against Fox? Lewis, do you want to answer this one?
Yeah, I just answered it on the in the chat / question and answer. We're investigating all potential exposed advertisers in terms of their role. We have, you know, there's a lot going behind it. The whether or not their role was merely placing something on the air versus reviewing scripts and participating in other ways that generate liability, we're exploring all those avenues, and whether or not a particular advertiser under the law and facts as we have them can be held accountable is an analysis we have to go through, and we're doing that for each. So Fox may or may not be a target, and that is why we filed the motion to preserve claims, because we want to leave no stone unturned.
Yeah, can I just bolt on a little comment there? So, I mean, I like the way Lewis characterized, especially that last statement, which is whether or not they are a defendant, because we have chased people that, you know, are not disclosed, because sometimes in litigation you have to seal things. And so, you know, we're not going to say whether or not we have chased Fox or any other individual investor to the extent that we aren't able to do that publicly. Having said all of that, I would also note for this Mr. or Ms. PL that asked the question, if you have specific information that would help us chase Fox that you want to share with us, please reach out to the S. Miller team and send it to them. So if there's, you know, something where you relied on a specific ad and you recorded that ad and you think that would be helpful to our case, you know, send us an email. So thank you for raising that question.
Thank you. There was a follow-up. Fox Business had lots of ads about NRIA.
Sure. Oh, there you go. So, yeah. So please, you know, give us some details and we will certainly take that into account.
Yeah. As I've said previously, I mean, there's a balance of catharsis and cash in these cases, getting recoveries and making the bad guys suffer pay and seeking justice. I think at this point, we're definitely in the cash phase of trying to get as much of a return to the investors as possible. That, I believe, is the last question.
No, there's more.
Is there more? Okay.
Yep. Where is it here? There was a question I just thought I just saw.
Just so people know, that's all that I see.
Oh, here it
maybe,
is.
Was
there a question about this? I see here from Jonah Eber.
Excuse that was me. What, Lewis,
are those answered? Okay. Oh, okay. Yeah. Thanks. Sorry. That's it. All right. Matthew, closing statements.
Yeah, I mean, I sort of chimed in here throughout the meeting, but everything is moving along favorably on the real estate side. You know, we've got the Bergen Line sale, we've got the development of the Grand coming up. I like the pivot on the Philadelphia project, the townhouses, the marina being completed. So everything's moving along. litigation. You know, I like that the CMB lawsuit was dismissed. I think I was actually named personally in that one, if I'm not mistaken. So I especially like that one being dismissed. Claims reconciliation, I believe, is complete or very near complete. I think we're pretty much done with that now, based on the last objection that we filed. So, you know, all of these items are moving forward, and we feel like we're moving them forward effectively, working for all of you, your investors, and we appreciate you taking an hour out of your evening to jump in here and hear how things are going. That's all I've got.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.